Hello. Hello, Dan, it's me. Listen, I've got Ed on the podcast today, and I know you spoke to him fairly recently. I was just wondering if you had any conversational angles you thought it might be worth me taking.
He loves space weirdos.
All right, space weirdos. I could work with that, I suppose. Cheers for you.
So let's talk about A Song of Ice and Fire, then.
Sorry, Dan, I'd love to, but I need to go and speak to Ed at the moment. Appreciate your help, though. We'll catch up soon, I promise.
Woo!
Brought to you by BedroomBattlefields.com, this is the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. Big thanks to my good pal Dan of Paint All The Minis for the heads up at the start there. Dan and today's guest Ed had a brilliant chat recently about space weirdos and why Ed loves it so much. If you haven't heard that episode yet, I'd thoroughly recommend checking it out, along with the 270 odd other episodes Dan has in his feed over at Paint All The Minis. And today we're going to build on that conversation because Ed doesn't just love space weirdos anymore, he's actually gone and facilitated a fan expansion of this cult classic miniature agnostic game. So let's get all the gory details from the man himself. How are you doing today, Ed?
I'm very well, Matthew. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks. I have it on very good authority that you just love space weirdos. I've heard it said.
It's a rumour that's going round that I'm quite keen on the game, yeah.
I mean, you've now got to the stage, Ed, where you're not just like enthusiastically playing space weirdos, you've actually contributed in some way to the game. So tell us a wee bit about what's been going on.
Well, as you said, I've been a fan of Space Weirdos for a while. It was the game that got me back into miniature wargaming. And so I joined the Discord about 3 years ago, around the time I got into the game. And, you know, I mostly just joined to kind of be able to ask questions about the game and, you know, see what other people were doing in the community. And the more I chatted to people, the more friends I made on the Discord channel. It's really friendly there. Anyone who's interested in the game, I highly recommend joining the Discord. There is a link in the fan expansion, which, spoiler, we're going to talk about in a minute. And so over time, people were sharing house rules and, you know, scenarios they came up with, warbands they come up with. And there'd been chat over about a year or so with people saying, oh, it'd be really nice if we had like an expansion. Casey was very much of the mind that he'd drawn a line on the Space Weirdos, it was done. And if we wanted some kind of expansion, we as the fans needed to do something. And so one day in a moment of madness, I turned around and went, okay, I'll take the lead. So, yeah, it kind of went from there, really. Do you want to have a bit of a chat about the process, about how I went about it, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, that'd be a great place to start. Ooh. So, like, you've made the decision, like, let's run with this, let's take the lead. So, that what are your first steps there?
So, the first step was to go to the specific Space Weirdos channel in the Discord chat, and I went through every message dating back to when it was first created, which would have been sort of 4 years worth of messages, going back just looking for all the places where people had come up with ideas about the game, advice on how to play the game, as I say, like scenarios or warbands or anything, and kind of copying, pasting, making sure I'd made note of who came up with the idea so I could credit people, and putting that all into a document. So I made this like raw document, which was pages and pages long of just all of the ideas. And from that point, I kind of then sorted through them and sorted them through into sort of sections. So house rules, ideas for weapons, ideas for powers, et cetera, et cetera. And then once I'd done that, I then kind of cherry-picked what I thought would be best in the expansion, because there was a huge amount of ideas there, and it needed whittling down a little bit. So I got rid of stuff which may, you know, where there were two similar examples. Casey's very good at writing very clear, concise rules. And so anytime there were two examples of a similar thing, I chose the thing which managed to explain itself more concisely. There were a couple of ideas which were really fun, but didn't necessarily, they took a bit too long to explain. And so those things kind of got cut a little bit as well. And that got me down to a document which had a whole bunch of stuff in. I wanted the expansion to very much feel like Space Widows. So again, making sure that the language was really concise, and then going through and sort of like going, right, okay, so what has Casey done in the original thing? And how can we build on it? How can we take, you know, for example, he's done, you know, you've got a list of weapons, right? Okay, so we'll have a list of weapons. He's put in some scenarios, so we'll have some more scenarios. He's put in some warbands, so we'll put in some more warbands. And communicating with the community as well, and saying, look, you know, this is what I'm building, what I'm editing together. What do you guys want to see? What would you like to see developed? What new things do we want brought into it? And so it was that kind of me going back, finding the ideas, bringing them forward, sorting them out into something which made logical sense, and then communicating with the community and saying, right, okay, so these are the ideas that are out there. What do we think we should be keeping? What do you think we should be losing? That kind of stuff.
It sounds like a big undertaking. I mean, it obviously was. Like, how do you kind of, how did you approach that? You know, on the one hand, like, one person kind of has to take the lead and drive it and probably make decisions, versus obviously giving everyone an input and you could kind of die by committee. So how did you kind of navigate that tightrope?
Well, I'm the glorious overlord, and I made decisions. Like I said, I did speak with the community, and there was back and forth within the community, but if a decision needed to be made, I kind of made it. Because there has, as you say, that there has to be someone making those decisions at the end of the day. And I'd taken on the responsibility of putting it together. So I felt it was my responsibility to make sure that things happened and decisions were made. To be honest, I don't think there was anything that I can think of where the community said, we want this, and I went, no. There might have been a couple of occasions, perhaps, again, where an example might be, there is a web weapon, and me and another couple of members of the community were going back and forth about how it was best to describe it and put it in. And I did kind of override a little bit there, just purely because the ideas that they had, they weren't bad ideas, they were great ideas. But the ability to explain it concisely and keep it contained within the space that we had, I didn't want it to be bigger than Space Widows. I wanted it to be, again, 16 pages. So I wanted to, space was a premium. Having half a page about web weapons, which is a pretty situational niche thing, just felt like it was doing too much for something which was too niche. And so that's actually something I've gone back and rewritten. And so when Millennium, which is the name of the fan expansion, came out, the wording in it is a bit clunky. And last weekend, Casey actually uploaded a fresh version. So it's got an updated explanation, which is far more concise. Is it the best version of it? No, I think actually, you know, if you gave it more space to create more, then you could make it a more exciting thing. But at the same time, as I said, you don't want it to become like a sidetrack where you end up spending too much time on it. It was almost like we either need to kill it off or we need to keep it really concise. And we wanted the thing in there, so we went for the concise version. But I think that would probably be a good example of where actually I probably did use my power to sort of say, no, this is something we need to manage within the project.
By the end of it, you're just sitting on a throne of skulls.
Yeah, absolutely. Don't go into the Space Widow Discord. There is bodies everywhere.
Just skulls. so once you've got this document together in a shape that you're kind of happy with, what are then the next steps?
So as I was editing it together, I reached out to the community and said, look, I'm looking for artists. We want to put a load of fan-made art into this, so it's not just text. We want it to look really cool and look like it's a proper thing, which I think it does. And so there are a bunch of really talented artists within the Space Widows community. And I asked people to submit art, which a whole bunch of people did, including our good friend Callum. He submitted some lovely bits. And yeah, we got some, as I say, some great submissions. We have a cover, which was inspired by one of the early second edition artworks for 40K, which obviously is inspiration for where a lot of us come from in the beginning of our hobby. But it's flipped. So it's the, instead of a blood angel shooting down orcs, it's an orc shooting down space marines. So Spenner, who is the artist who did that for us, again, super talented guy. He does a lot of model design for miniatures, as well as a lot of other artwork. And he very kindly did it. Everyone who contributed their art did it for free, which was, again, really generous of everyone. So once we got together all the artwork and we got the text, we went to layout, and that's where the first really big hurdle came, because I am not a layout guy. That is not where my skill set was, and I was trying to do it and I was really struggling. I found it really hard to manage the software that I was using. And so after a couple of months of me going, this is just driving me insane, I reached out to the community again and was like, right, guys, I need some help. And so we had four or five people in the community who put their hands up and went, we'll help out with layout. And so one of the guys said, look, let's use Canva. It's something he was quite familiar with. It's relatively intuitive. I still struggle with it, but as I say, I'm not really a layout person. I kind of let everyone else go through the layout, and then I just kind of gave a little bit of direction here or there, tweaked a couple of things which I thought needed tweaking, but really very little. They all did an amazing job. And so yeah, we got that to laid out and put in all the contributors. I hope I got everyone who contributed, or everyone whose ideas are found in there credited within the credits. And yeah, it was relatively straightforward, even if it didn't feel like it at the time, I guess.
So just going back to the sort of contents of the book, mm-hmm. a big part of like what you seem to love about Space Weirdos, and you've talked a lot about the Space Weirdos community mm-hmm. being heavily narrative driven, and I know mm-hmm. you, like myself, are a big fan of the sci-fi skirmish mm-hmm. scenarios book by John Lambshead, and I know that you've used a lot of those in your games. So mm-hmm. Have you got any examples, one or two scenarios that were created to put into this expansion?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, whilst you mentioned John Lambshead, I mean, for a long time, that was within the Space Widows Discord community, that book was considered the unofficial expansion, because it enabled you to do so much with the base game. So lots of love. Anyone who's into, well, any kind of skirmishing, because you can really convert them to any kind of skirmish style, but particularly sci-fi skirmishing, I highly recommend that book. We had a few scenarios. We've got a bombing scenario where one person's trying to protect some objectives and the other person's trying to lay bombs onto them. Then we have a variant where those objectives become little barrels of tea, space tea, and one person's trying to spill the tea and the other person's trying to protect it. So there's scenarios where you have a base scenario and then we have like a slightly different variation on that scenario as well. We've got a cops and robbers scenario, where again it's kind of a twist on the loot box scenario that's in the initial game. We've got a death cannon scenario where you put a cannon in the middle of the board, and essentially you want to be in control of the cannon at the end of the game, but you can use the cannon to blast other people at the same time. So you might get on the cannon and be able to blast a couple of guys but still be knocked off at the end of the game. So it just felt like, again, quite a fun way to play it. And there's a few others as well. You know, there's sort of a race to the exit, a rescue scenario, a monster hunting scenario. So yeah, it was just trying to provide a few other sort of tailored gameplay experiences.
As well as obviously the community benefiting mm. from having more Space Weirdos content, I believe there's charitable beneficiaries too. Can you tell us a wee bit about that?
Yeah, so when I was doing all of this, I was in conversation with Casey. And, you know, he was super supportive right the way through of us, the bands creating this, and agreed for us to also put in content that he'd made just so that everything was all in one place. And a part of those conversations, I was sort of just chatting and saying, you know, I think the community has put a lot of work into this, and, you know, we should be, there should be some, you know, it's good enough. I want it to be good enough that people will want to pay for it. And Casey was very much of the opinion that, you know, he didn't want to profit from it, and there didn't seem to be a way for the content creators to profit from it. And he suggested, well, why don't we take all the proceeds and give it to charity? I was like, yeah, that's a fantastic idea. It's a wonderful way for us to give back to, you know, to worthy causes. And so we kind of chatted away, and initially the first 2 months worth of proceeds from this are going to the Trevor Project in the US, which supports young adults within the LGBTQ plus community, and in the UK to Mermaids, which is a charity which supports young trans people. And, you know, they're both charities which we each have sort of feel are really important. You know, I have my sister-in-law is trans, and I know she goes through, has had a lot of struggles with that. I've got quite a number of friends who are trans. I know it's a really difficult time out there at the moment for that. And so it felt like a really good way to help offer some support to those communities, which in many places are under attack from certain parts of society. But it won't always be just those two charities. The intention is to raise money for different charities over time. And Casey and I will have a chat each time and sort of suggest charities to each other and, you know, support different groups. So far, I've not got the latest numbers, but I know we've raised well over $1,000 now, which is fantastic. So yeah, just felt like a way of doing things which was, you know, giving back and really positive.
And how was the reception like from the community? I mean, obviously a lot of folks had input and were involved. Like, when you finally got out there, how was any sort of feedback sounding that you managed to get?
So everyone's been really excited about it, which has been lovely. So it was uploaded onto War Games Vault, and within 24 hours, it was number one on War Games Vault, which was kind of bonkers. And it was up around number one for a good week or so, and I believe it's still in the top 10. It was the last time I had a look. So lots of people seem very eager to get their hands on it and use it. Within the Discord chat, I've only heard positive things about it. So everyone seems really pleased and be enjoying the content that is there. As I say, we did upload a refresh with a slightly reworded web weapons thing. There were a couple of other typos that were spotted, so we updated those as well. So there was a little, the only kind of feedback was either, yeah, this is great fun, thank you, or, oh, I spotted this small thing, you might want to catch that. I'm like, oh, thank you. I thought we got almost everything. And that's inevitably the way, like, we did loads of proofreading, and then Casey uploaded it, and about half an hour to an hour after he uploads it, I'm sat there reading through it, going, oh, I'm really pleased with how this turned out. And I immediately noticed a mistake and went, no, it's just sod's law. So unless we notice anything else that's really kind of like confusing or egregiously mistaken, then I don't think we'll do any more changes. So I think it's pretty much in its final form now. But yeah, that's the joy, I guess, of having an upload or a download, is that it's so easy to update if you need to.
The Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast is proud to be sponsored by Dr. Spork's 3D Terrain. From retro greenskin outposts to elven fortresses and obelisks, this is hands down the best nostalgic scenery you'll find out there, and all at stupidly reasonable prices. Check it out for yourself by searching for Dr. Spork on Cults 3D or My Mini Factory, and turn your bedroom battlefields into a scene from White Dwarf circa 1994. Andy Chambers not included.
Have you had the chances yet to play any of the scenarios?
I have not really had a chance to play, or I haven't played since the since it's come out. I've been caught up playing other games, so I want to get it on the table again soon. I miss Space Widows. I've not played it for a few months, which, you know, having written the expansion, I almost feel a little bit guilty that I'm not playing more with it at the moment. But you know how things are. It depends what your group is playing at that specific time. And over the autumn, there's been a lot of second edition 40K played, which is another game that I'm very passionate about. And a lot of Blood Bowl, because we had a Blood Bowl tournament beginning of the month, which was a lot of fun to play in. And so I needed to get a couple of practice games of that in, which was well worth it because I ended up coming third in the tournament, which is kind of bonkers because I've only just got back into the game. So, yeah, a little humble brag for you there. So, yeah, it's really between I work for a wine merchant. So we've just hit the busy time of the year. So I don't think I'm going to get any weirdos in until just after Christmas. But I've got lined up a game sort of between Christmas and New Year with one of my regular Space Widows buddies. So it's something to look forwards to, for sure. But I play tested a lot of things in here. The scenarios were mostly developed by other people, so other people have play tested those. But, you know, a lot of the rules, there are a lot of rules that I have within my standard house rules for my Space Widows group, which found their way in, or were rules that we picked up off other people. So, yeah, I've definitely used a lot of the content in there over the last couple of years, but not since it's come out.
I did see that I'd seen on the Discord you'd been playing some Blood Bowl. So, I mean, that's what edition? Not that I know, as far as I know, there's not a huge difference, but what edition do you play?
So the club plays, well, we were playing 2020 edition, which was great. It was fun. Essentially, Blood Bowl is Blood Bowl. It's still very recognizable from first edition I played, which was third edition as a kid. You know, yes, there are differences, but nothing that meant that it wasn't very easy for me to get back into. The club is also looking to run a league next year and hopefully host the tournament again. But we'll be moving on to the edition that's just been released. Whether it's better or not, I don't know. Well, I haven't had a chance to play it yet. So, yeah, I mean, I don't mind what edition I play. I've played a few games of third edition since I came back into Blood Bowl with a couple of friends. And that seems just as fun as the 2020 edition. So, you know, it's got a little bit more madness, though, especially once you bring in some of the Death Zone cards, which can be absolutely insane. But yeah, at some point, you and I, we need to arrange playing a game in Blood Bowl because I know it's a game you like as well.
Yeah, for sure. I've had a few games of it. I had to make my own quick reference sheet for it because, like, again, I've never laid out a rule book, so I've no doubt it's very challenging. But the 2020 rule book, I was like, it was like almost like a choose your own adventure. I think I've talked about it before, but it was like, go here to find this thing. And it's like, no, actually, you need to go there first to find out this thing. No, actually, you need to. So I had to sit one day, it took me like an hour, and just make my own. Because the quick reference sheet you get in the box is absolute guff. Like, it's got some stuff in it, but not much. And all the stuff I didn't want, like, again, I say new in quotation marks because I did play it in the 90s, but a lot of the stuff at this early stage, I'm not interested in doing all the kickoff events. I'm not interested in whether I'm still trying to get to grips. So, like, how does this play? So, there was a few things I just had to get clear in my head, I guess. What team is it that you're on, or teams?
So, my main team is Dark Elves. I managed to pick up a 1980s Dark Elf team, metal team, which the models were just such a pleasure to paint. I really enjoyed the whole painting experience. I'm really pleased. I put in a little bit extra effort compared to the other Blood Bowl teams that I've got. I've also got a human team and an orc team because I had the third edition box set. So I've got those, and I kitbashed and sort of converted together a goblin team as well. So, but they're not painted badly, but they are painted to a very basic paint job. Whereas the Dark Elves, I was like, no, I'm going to properly highlight these and take the time and the effort to get them right. I bought a couple of 80s era Witch Elves because the 80s Blood Bowl teams for the Dark Elves didn't have Witch Elves. So, and the 90s ones are just slightly out of scale, and I wanted them to feel like a 1980s heavy metal team. So I picked up a couple. They've got knives, but I don't think that really matters too much. They don't kind of drive focus away. I avoided anything with a big sword or sort of big melee weapon because I didn't want it to drive focus away. But they look really cool. I've got a star player for them as well from one of the star player releases that again from that period. And then I put them on. I wasn't sure if I wanted to run them for the club tournament. So I was like, oh, I'll just play a game and see how they feel. And I just had the best time. It's so much fun. Doing really irritating elf stuff, you know, dodging out of people's tackle zone so that they can't block me next turn and, you know, being a real menace. And yeah, I've just really enjoyed them. I've got a Skaven team, a 90s metal Skaven team that I want to get painted up at some point, which was a birthday present to myself back in the summer, kind of a Blood Bowl summer painting. And so, but it felt like I needed a sort of stepping stone to the Skaven because they're quite fragile. They are an agile team as well, but they're quite fragile. So Dark Elves have a bit of resilience built into them, slightly better armor. Not necessarily quite as fast. They're still quick. Don't get me wrong. You've got movement 7 players in there, but yeah, I wanted to kind of get back into the game, get a little bit more kind of understanding about some of the tactics that are involved. And yeah, it was. They're a fun team to run.
And thanks for sending those. You sent me a few humans up because I had some leftovers from my box when I was young, but not many. So that helped fill the squad out a wee bit. So I noticed like this guy, the guy in the red.
Yes.
Is he from like the 80s or that? Like he's a plastic human.
He's a plastic human from the second edition box set.
Right.
And I had a couple of them. So I've kept one for myself, and I thought you might appreciate it as like a star player model or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, no, he's got that look about him compared to the others. I definitely see a star player role for him. So, but yeah, no, thanks for sending those over. They help bulk the squad out. So I'm working on getting those all primed at the moment. I've got my Chaos team, like my 90s Chaos team, and then I've got my gnomes team as well, and I've probably got enough like orcs from, is it third edition, the 90s box?
Yeah.
I've probably got enough of them, and I've got like some fanatics and a squig hopper from actual Warhammer that I could just probably convert a wee bit, or not even convert, just throw them in there. So
absolutely, use the squig hopper as a pogo. Like, you know, it's the same basic thing, isn't it? You know, it's a jumping model, which... And those squig hoppers are great fun. I love them. They're beautiful.
So when you get together at your club, like it's been Blood Bowl recently, you're also talking about second edition 40K. Like, are you going down there like every week, every other week? How does that look?
I'm there most weeks. So about 18 months ago, I joined the committee for the club. And last summer, I got elected as treasurer, so I just seem to take on more and more responsibility there. So I go down and help set up, and I'm usually there to close things down and tidy away as well. I'm there more weeks than I'm not, although I perhaps said to the rest of the committee, you're not going to see me much over Christmas because work is just like bonkers. I've got to work a bunch of Sundays, which is the day we normally meet. But yeah, I've really enjoyed getting involved with the local club, and you know, we've been saying about, you know, things that we do at club nights. You know, we played a second edition sort of narrative campaign this autumn. We had a big narrative day back in the spring. We're going to do that again next year. We're going to change it slightly. Whereas this year gone, we played sort of three games each, sort of, you know, 1v1s. And depending on how many of the objectives you managed to take depended on who you played next. Next year, we're just going to play one big game and get as many points on the table as possible and have it as the autumn campaign was the orcs going on the offensive in Armageddon. So this is going to be the end of that, where we have a big final assault on a Hive City on Armageddon, and hopefully get some people from outside the club come down again and sort of get 6,000 to 8,000, maybe a few more points on the table.
Thought you were going to say people there. I was thinking that's a big club.
No, if we can get, I'm hoping to get 8 to 12 people, you know, 4 to 6 people aside, all pushing models around and rolling dice and having a good time. I mean, second edition really is a skirmish game. It's not built for big scale battles, but as a one-off, you know, it'll be fun. And we use the autumn campaign to kind of try out having multiple players on each side. We had a couple of games where each side was 3 aside, and we each turned up with, I think it was like 850 points each. And the games went really quickly and smoothly. So I think it will scale up with enough people to get involved. I think if you don't have if you've got one person per 1,000 points, for example, I think it will play fine. However, if you've got one person controlling 2,000 points each, then I think it will really bog down. Certainly from experience, it can. Especially when you're playing a horde army like Orcs or Imperial Guard, which are, of course, two of the main factions in Armageddon. For those of you who don't know, that's a big kind of assault, Orc assault on an Imperial planet where, you know, it's, yeah, causes absolute devastation, please, and rip it apart.
Sounds like the club already has plans then for next year. How much does that dictate what you're going to be up to on the hobby front? Like, do you still have room for stuff on a whim now and then?
Yeah, so I try and have a bit of a balance between what I'm doing for events at the club. So a lot of the second edition 40K stuff I do at the club, I am the driving force along with another guy who has been very supportive, and the two of us really got the Old Hammer community going at the club. But then also stuff outside the club as well. So, for example, bring out your lead. I've got some plans for that, which will be Space Weirdos related. I also get involved with Jason and Mark's Big Gaming Day. Anyone who's familiar with the podcast, I'm sure, is familiar with Jason and Mark running insanely large battles. And I've been involved in most of those. The only one I didn't go to was Boyle because I had to work, unfortunately, this year. But they've been great fun. So back in the spring, we did a 28mm Man of War style. We all built boats and raced them to an island to try and get a treasure. And my Skaven, I built Skaven Doomraft, which repeatedly sank because we respawned after a couple of turns if you were sunk. It managed to blow itself up multiple times. But at the same time, my assassin was favored of the Great Horned Rat, killed its target, and ended up getting teleported to the island right at the beginning of the game, and then waited until the end when the opportunity arose to steal the treasure and escape. And so it was a really kind of strange experience where everything went my way and at the same time went against me. And I felt like the Great Horned Rat has put his little paw, or his great paw, on my shoulder and went, "You are beloved of me now." And I promised myself, I'm not going to build a Skaven army. I'm not going to build a Skaven army. I kept telling myself that, and then suddenly found myself buying lots of rat. So my current hobby target is building about 1,000 points of Skaven for Jason and Mark's next big game, say, which is, I believe, the 10th of January. So I'm working on that at the moment to take that along. But then sort of separate to all of that, I have Old Hammer army building projects, which I'm going to work on next year, which is I want to make a Harlequin army. I love the Harlequins miniatures. They were the Eldar miniatures as a kid that I was like, these are so cool. They've got this, you know, the Harlequin's kiss, and that sounds amazing. But then when you see it on the battlefield, it's even more terrifying. And so I kind of loved that as a kid. And I was like, you know what? Rather than just build a straight Eldar force, I want to build an Eldar Harlequin army because, yeah, young Ed would be so happy about that and just love it. So I'm going to use it as an opportunity to slow my painting down, take more time, and be a little bit more deliberate about what I'm doing. Not that I'm not deliberate, but, you know, I tend to paint to get things done quickly. So I want to just kind of challenge myself a little bit. And that seemed like a really good project to do that with. So yeah, there's a whole bunch of projects. I've got some of Callum's 3D printed terrain. I want to get painted up in time for the big games day in the spring, for the big narrative day. I think, you know, between painting rats, harlequins, and terrain, that'll probably keep me busy most of next year. Hopefully we'll find time to build, to paint a couple of warbands as well, because, you know, warbands make great refreshers, I think. You know, if you've been working on an army project for a while, it can get, it can start to be a little bit stale sometimes, or a little bit kind of exhausted. And then you know, it's like, right, actually, I've got 5 to 10 models, which are, you know, totally different from what I've been painting, and I'll paint them and kind of feel refreshed, and I can go back to the bigger project. So, yeah.
Yeah, I've noticed that. I mean, recently, so I started my 50 mil collection summer 2023, and that was like buying 2 full armies, and then I got a third army as well, accidentally, if such a thing is possible. So that was me, like, just last week or the week before, put the final coat of varnish on the very final unit of the 3 armies. And it was a funny sort of feeling, because, like, that, I'm not saying I've not done other stuff in that time, I definitely have, but when you've got that background noise of a huge project that's not getting finished anytime soon, and for a long time I couldn't even conceive of it being finished, it was just like steady drips. And it was quite funny to get to that point of, like, you know, I still had stuff on my to-do list, if you like, but it felt like a kind of clean break, you know, almost like a what's next. And I had the sort of like hankering to even just tidy up my setup. It seemed like a good opportunity to organize my paints and sort everything out, because, you know, when there's a lot of stuff half done, it's like, it's a really bad time to do anything like that. So it was the first time I've kind of experienced that, like, clear transition into doing something else. And now I've got, like I say, I've got the Human Blood Bowl team there, and I got a bunch of stuff for my birthday from my daughter. I got the Thundercats miniatures from Crooked Dice. So I've got a wee warband of Thundercats, which is great. And my brother-in-law, he got me one of the Masters of the Universe sets with, like, She-Ra and everything, because my daughter really likes She-Ra. So I've got her too. So I'm, like, already now thinking about, like, what am I going to do? I'm going to get these Thundercats and She-Ra and that, make a wee warband. And I'm already thinking about games to play with that. And but you get, again, this other weird phenomenon that I've realized as well. There's almost this hobby lag of, like, the thing you most want to play with is the thing you're just priming at the moment. It's not even the thing you're painting, it's the thing you're priming. You're like, I just really want to play with this. Whereas the stuff that's finished, you want to play with it, but it's just, there's less of an appeal to that, like, what's right in front of you right now. Do you kind of experience that yourself?
Yeah, sometimes. You know, it's difficult, because, you know, your brain's, you come across an idea, you're like, oh yes, that would be amazing, what do I need to put that together? And you start putting it all together. By the time you've got it together, you've thought about it so much that initial excitement's not necessarily there in the same way. It's one of the reasons why I think having kind of event objectives is really useful, because, you know, for example, the big Warhammer games or Boyle, you know, you're like, right, okay, I'm going to develop this army, I'm going to build this army for this event. And so you have the excitement of, right, I'm starting to build it, this is all good. And once it's done, you still have the excitement of the event itself. So I found that that has been quite a useful way of, like, keeping the drive going to a degree. But, you know, sometimes there is a joy of just, I just want to get these models are cool, I just want to paint them. I don't necessarily have a deadline involved, but I'm just going to focus on doing them so that they're done. And then they're there whenever I come up with the idea of what I'm going to do with them. I painted, like, a small group of female space marines sculpted by Sata Miniatures. And I had the best time painting them. I really loved it. A couple of them have hit the table in sort of Space Widows since I painted them. But I didn't really have a specific thing in mind. Whilst I was kind of excited about creating a little bit of lore for them, like, it was, it the drive was, I'm enjoying painting these. I want to get them painted. I've got a couple of vehicles, like a dreadnought type thing and an APC, which are primed and they're ready, but I've got a block on it at the moment. And so they're kind of sat there, and at some point I'll get back to them. I think that's probably a case where I need to have an event come up where I'm like, actually, no, I'm going to use these in a club game, or I'm going to use them. I'm going to arrange a game with Jason and we're going to meet up and play some second edition. And that'll, because we both got to travel sort of an hour each to find a middle spot to play, you know, that feels like, okay, now that'll be an event, that'll be a target. So that'll probably what ends up driving me to finish that little project. But yeah, sometimes just painting for the sake of painting is just lovely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, there's a funny thing where, like, you do need discipline to an extent, or you won't finish big projects. Like, there's no way around some parts of what you're doing is just going to be a grind or a slog, especially if you're dealing with, like, 50 monopose spearmen or whatever. But at the same time, it being a hobby, it's a shame to deny yourself. You know, if you just really want to paint something you're really enthusiastic about right now, it's a shame just to say, no, I can't do that. You know, I've got to, like, do the boots on these 400 infantry. So I think you've just got to find a healthy balance there, don't you?
Yeah. And as a Skaven follower now, you know, I have a lot of clan rats to paint. So I wanted to get two units of 25 clan rats done. I've made them up of the monopose plastics from the late 80s, early 90s. So there's three different monoposes. So there's the rat from the very first experiments that Games Workshop did with plastic injection models. There's the one from the, it's not Warhammer Quest, what's the other one that they did?
Talisman?
No, not Talisman. It's
HeroQuest.
HeroQuest, that's the one I'm looking for. And then there's the fourth edition plastic Skavens. So I've made units using a mix of all three of those. But that's 50 clan rats to paint. And so I kind of went, right, well, I'm going to do one unit. I'm going to get 25 of those done. And then I'm going to do some character models. And then I'll go back and do the other 25, which are nearly done now, thankfully. I've just got some basing and a banner to paint. And then I'm going to do some more characters. So I think sometimes, like, going, actually, no, here's a little reward. You get to paint the more exciting models after you painted some of the base models you need. It kind of like helps drive you onwards, because I'm like, I get to paint some warp fire throwers. This is going to be so cool. I'm really excited about those models. So yeah, I think definitely giving yourself targets, giving yourself rewards is a really strong way to helping you drive your hobby forwards. Because as much as, you know, we're all passionate about the hobby, you know, we all have different parts of the hobby we get excited by. And sometimes you've got to, you know, go, right, actually, no, I've got this game coming up that I want to have this done by. Or I've got this other model that I'm excited to paint, so I'm going to paint a few of the models that I'm less excited about but kind of need within this faction. You know, things like that are really good motivators.
If you're one of those kind-hearted people who tips their servers, taxi drivers and bar staff, how about tipping your favourite podcaster too? And if you've any money left after that, how about tipping me? If you appreciate the work that goes into putting this show together, or if this episode's simply helping you to pass the time whilst you work, drive or paint, then you could leave a little something by going to bedroombattlefields.com/tip. That's bedroombattlefields.com/TIP. And now, back to the show. So what's imminently next for you then? You got anything planned, like, in the coming week or so?
Yeah, so this weekend, one of my friends at the club, she has been excited to play Xenos Rampant, which is a game I played a few games of, but not for a while, not for quite a long time. I think the last time I played was last year. But she's been really excited. She's just picked it up and she was like, I really want to give it a go. Does anyone want to try it out with me? I was like, yeah, well, I played a little bit. It's a fun game. I'll play. So I've got a game of that on Sunday. I'm going to take my Xenos Cult, or my Gene Studer Cult, along with that. And then after that, it's pretty much Christmas work all the way. If I can get a game in, that'd be great. I'll only really be playing something I know well, so maybe might try and get a game of Space Widows in, or I might try and get a game of second edition in. But if I get one game in, I think that'll be between, you know, this weekend and Christmas, will be as much as I'm expecting. And then next year, let's say, bring out your lead. So hopefully get a bit more gaming of Space Widows in. There's definitely going to be some second edition going on. There's going to be some Blood Bowl going on. I also used to do, I don't know if I've ever spoken to you about this, so I used to do a lot of GMing. That's what really got me into tabletop hobbying as an adult, was running role-playing games for friends. And I got a bit burnt out a few years ago as part of why I transitioned into tabletop gaming, wargaming. And I've just started to find my mojo again with it. And the game that is my favorite thing to run is called Mouse Ritter, where you play as little mice going out into the world and going on adventures. And there was a fan expansion for that, which actually, funnily enough, was part of my inspiration to, you know, really want to do the Space Widows fan expansion. I'd seen some fan expansions for Mouse Ritter that were really, really well done, really professionally done, and very much inspired me to, you know, want to do the Space Widows expansion. And one of the expansion that I got back in the summer, I backed it quite a while ago, but I received it end of the summer, was a mega dungeon. And so after running a few games this year, I'm like, right, okay, we're going to run a campaign where everyone tries to go into this mega dungeon and find treasure. And perhaps they'll live, perhaps they won't. Mouse Ritter is a very dangerous game to play, with a very high risk of, you know, death and bad outcomes. So yeah, I'm looking forward to being the big bad and running games for friends and having a good time.
Good stuff, Ed. It's been a really good catch up, and I appreciate you taking the time. Back to the Space Weirdos expansion. Yeah. Where could the listener go to check it out?
So you can find Space Widows at Wargames Vault. It's $5 to download. All proceeds go to charity. It's filled with new ideas, you know, as I say, new scenarios, new equipment, new spells. Some of the stuff is made by Casey. Some of the stuff has been ported over and sort of adjusted for Space Widows from Sword Widows. Some of the ideas are just totally new ideas. We've got advice in there. We've got, you know, house rules. We've got a campaign system. So there's loads of stuff in there. And if you enjoy skirmish gaming and you want a really fun, sort of narrative-driven, cinematic feel of a game, then I highly recommend Space Widows. It's really worth a try. The base game is $4.99. So for less than $10, you can get the base game and the expansion. Know that you're giving money to charity, to worthy causes, and, you know, have a system which will enable you to play in whatever setting you want, using whatever models you want, and just have a great time at the table. So yeah, go download it. Go buy it. Why wouldn't you?
Thanks very much for listening to this episode of the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. If you enjoy the show, then please do share it with someone else you think might enjoy it too. And be sure to check out our Discord community of like-minded hobbyists, which you could find at bedroombattlefields.com/Discord. It'd be great to see you in there.